Welcome to our podcast where we share our experience as first-generation Haitian Americans through our different perspective on our culture while creating a safe space. I be Lisa Fania.
I'm Soraya. And we have a special guest here today.
I'm so excited.
Can you hear? Super excited. Thank you.
Awesome.
I'm sorry. Yeah, my name's Akeem Smite, so I'm honored to be a guest this morning. Thank you.
First one after our cousin.
Yes. Exactly. You know, we're getting international with
He's
this.
Like an honorary cousin.
Stepping out of Haiti, going to another island, Jamaica, Sierra Leone, stand up.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
Okay, so sac
passé. Sac passé, wagwan, you know, all that first generation lingo that we grew up with.
No, but really, what's going on?
Man, it's Easter Sunday. So, I mean, just started tradition, which was some bun and cheese, which is a very popular dish. And also just didn't do anything. Like, it's been a lot of running up and down. Obviously, a lot of people are going through stuff. And I had like class yesterday and then work. But it feels good to say that nothing really is going on except being with you guys. So
yeah, that's awesome. It's like a break.
Yes, oh, definitely.
I am just, you know, I was telling y'all yesterday, I went grocery shopping and that was overwhelming.
And I would never.
I used to have a BJ's card, so I know the benefits of having one. So my cousin was up and he has a BJ's card. So I was like, hey, why don't we stop by BJ's and do some groceries and get some gas? You know, I'm trying to finagle the benefits. That gas is 50 cents cheaper than regular gas.
Gas is winning right now. Off of Marlin Road, the BJ, shout out to that BJ's. I think they're like at 155, something like that. So definitely.
120, 130.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yo, how can we keep that gas like to ourselves? Like, anyone have, any listeners have a warehouse or have a way of.
A gas tank underneath.
Yeah, a gas tank, a barrel. Like, how can we monopolize on this?
I like how your mind goes into
to the bag. Yes,
to
the back. Always. It's always about the bag.
Let me put it in my car, and then, you know.
No, I need barrels. I need barrels.
Ship it
to Haiti, let it hide for a little bit, then we bring it out 2021.
You put it in Haiti, you ain't going to see it.
You got to believe in your people.
Really high right now in Haiti, actually. Still.
Oh, you need it. Well, that's probably what y'all need to get for Christmas presents, then. Barrels of gas. Instead of barrels of food.
You know, they need both. Maybe some people don't own cars. All right, let's move on. Lisa, how?
Oh, back to you, sorry. All right.
I'm okay. Good. I did my meditations this morning with my homegirl. I did a yoga. I wrote.
Yes.
Moved my body.
First
of all, yesterday was a tough, like, I watched High Fidelity again, and I got back into my feelings.
Oh, what's that?
It's the one with Zoe Kravitz on Hulu.
It's
basically talking about, like, it's a lot of music-based, but then she's very toxic and going through, like, how toxic relationships are and what she does.
You should give reviews of things all the time. Because,
I like that.
The music in there is really good. She works at a record store.
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite part of the show.
Questlove is the one that is the musical director on the show.
That makes sense why the music's good. You guys saw the RZA premiere?
I was doing something else creative that I did not partake in it.
I feel you.
So I tuned in and they just kept talking. And then I was like, all right, I'll tune back in. And then I forgot.
Yeah. I mean, it was cool. It was Mad New York. So, like, you know, I'm from Miami, so I knew maybe about half the songs, but it was cool to see, like, the old heads, like, really getting their feelings about it, just reading the comments. It was like Nas was in there. But, yeah, it was cool.
Super sad that they canceled the Baby Five Pace.
No. It's been postponed.
It's rescheduled. Yeah, it's rescheduled.
Did they tell
you? Next weekend. It's Saturday next weekend.
I think he had COVID-19.
Are you serious?
I want to say something like that. Oh god, shit, this is recorded, so I may be wrong. Let me put a disclaimer. I think Babyface disclaimer. I believe the reason why was because if I read correctly, he would test positive for the coronavirus. So, you know, they had to get him checked out and all that. But I think they have a schedule for the 19th, something like that.
Crazy. crazy because when I saw it was postponed, I was like, one of them probably got the Rona. But I was like, let me not speculate. Let me.
Oh, I thought it was their money. Their money.
Let me. Let me go to.
Their money wasn't right.
Their money wasn't right. That's what I thought. Because I'm like, this is all being sponsored, and they're getting paid to do this. So like, I was just like, this, I was like, the money wasn't right. It wasn't enough. Something.
Go back. Okay. Yeah, I checked through his official sources, which is his Instagram page. And just real quickly, it said, I would like to warmly thank everyone for all the birthday wishes today. I feel so blessed to be able to create another birthday. I tested positive for the COVID-19 virus, as did my family. It's an incredibly scary thing to go through. My friends, I'm happy to report we have now tested negative and are on our way back to full health.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the day is, he says some other stuff, then April 18th at 6 p.m.
Okay.
Oh, no, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard. Oh, that's late.
Yeah, they keep doing these things late.
But it's a Saturday. 18?
Okay.
I believe it's a Saturday.
And you stay up during Saturday. All the days have mushed together.
Yeah.
All together.
Yeah, if I wasn't working, honestly, I wouldn't know the difference.
Facts. All right, so that's going to also be our Conzi Muño because, yeah, that's all everyone kind of is doing is kind of finding different ways to entertain themselves. A lot of pop-up like web series are happening. Mm-hmm. There's one that Lisa introduced me to, Face Ass Edition.
Oh.
You look at her name. I don't know what you're talking about. Her name is Crystal.
Okay.
And Keisha.
Keisha, yeah, they're a couple, and it's Inside Audition.
Audition, yes. And they just do face-ass news for head-ass people. And it's just an enlightening type of series. And their sense of humor is great.
Lena Waithe.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Lena's been on here. Lena's been talking to everyone.
I've seen
her lives with Niecy Nash. Who else was she talking to?
She always got a lot to say in a good way. Like she doubles down on her stance. So I definitely respect anyone that knows that doubles down on like what's important to them, what they value.
Right.
But yeah, it's definitely a lot of content out here. I mean, shout out. If I had more time, you know, I'm in the middle of getting my master's. I'm gonna plug that in because that's a whole damn job and a full time job. I've been pretty busy, but it's been great to just see. I feel like every time I'm on Instagram, like. My story, like everyone's on live, so I'm happy to see people just like creating content and having discussions and connecting. It's cool, so shout out to them.
Yeah, man.
So we have transition. Yeah, I know, because this is like, yeah, we're interviewing you, and this is our first
time. Oh, shoot,
he forgot, he thought he was.
I know, I thought I was just here, I thought it was just.
Out.
I didn't know I was getting only on me.
Tell us where you and your family are from.
Okay, so yeah, so I am a mutt, meaning my mom is Jamaican, and then my dad's from Sierra Leone, West Africa. So we're familiar with Blood Diamonds, the movie. The movie was based off of that country, but obviously there's more to it than that. But yeah, so I'm like half and half. Born here in Miami, though. Born and raised here in Miami, South Miami. So.
Do you have any siblings?
Yes, I have an older sister, so she's full Jamaican. But yeah, just me and her.
Nice.
You're gonna ask a question.
I mean, you want me to have like 10 siblings? No, I could listen.
Right, we were waiting.
I got a lot of cousins. That's a like, you know, first generation thing.
Are you close to your cousins? Are you close to them?
Like my blood cousins? Not as much as I want to be, just because. So my dad from Sierra Leone, he has four siblings, and he was the only one that came over here to Miami. The rest of them were in Sierra Leone, and once they had the war going on, majority of my family actually went to Australia. So my immediate cousins, like I talked to them on WhatsApp, I've been to Australia a few times to go visit, but I didn't grow up with them, so you know, sort of sucks. But I definitely have, I don't say play cousins, but you know, people that are close like family that are like more Nigerian, but I grew up with them and they basically accept me as family. So
nice. So you have your cousin's tribe.
Exactly. Definitely.
So growing up in Miami with these two different ethnicity, like, and being in Miami, which is mostly Hispanic and Jewish, how was that? Especially down south, since you grew up like near us. down south.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Miami's definitely like a unique spot because you have so many, just being black alone, there's a lot of complexity in that just because like you have your Caribbeans, you have like Africans, and then you have like your black Americans. And so there's a, that's already deeper levels. And then when you add on like other ethnicities and races, it starts to be sort of like a gumbo of a lot of different stuff. I think I sort of grew into it. You know, my name's the key, so it's already not, you know, the, it's not John or Alex. That was definitely something like growing up in elementary school, you know, the first day of class, every teacher basically fucking up your name. Like that's something I literally had to deal with from first grade to 12th grade. And it definitely was, you know, embarrassing at first, but it's crazy because now like my name is like everyone thinks it's so cool and this and the third, but it wasn't like that growing up. Same thing like skin complexion, you know, like I'm dark skin. So that was always something, you know, I feel like dark skin, I want to say dark skin wasn't in, but it just wasn't like.
Man,
Aki, okay, let's keep it 100.
Well, no. Dark skin men were in kind of, but not really.
We can't speak for dark skin men.
Dark skinned men is a it thing right now. Like it is
no,
a
it thing. Yeah. It was all about.
Yeah, growing up, it definitely light skin. And also, too, just if you were dark skinned, it was like American. So it was like that New York, you know what I mean? Or like Atlanta, not like a half African, Caribbean. So, I mean, those were things that were definitely adjustments that I had to deal with. But it's crazy because those things that I used to be like made fun of, and that used to bother me growing up are now some of like my biggest strengths. You know, like I'm a marketing major and I think it's always important to figure out how you position yourself from other people. And so like my name separates me from other people. My skin complexion separates me from other people. Like can't be, you know, those two things can't be replicated. Me just growing up with a Caribbean and African household is one-on-one. And so those are definitely like great strengths of mine now, like talking points that people are very intrigued by. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I can relate in that, like, you just become more comfortable with who you are. I guess, like, once people, like, how was it when you would, I guess, make friends? Would they, like, you know, like you said, they would call out the differences, but can you specifically talk about, like, maybe some name, this sounds weird, like names
no.
of like we were not us specifically, because Lisa and I are similar in that we wouldn't be like, oh, we're Haitian. We're like Haitian Dominican with a Dominican.
With some Asian, with some Chinese.
Yeah. Growing up, I was Puerto Rican. I was Dominican, Puerto Rican, black.
To
me.
Wait, you said that or people yeah, said that about you?
I said that because I'm just like growing, like you grew up in Miami,
so yeah, yeah.
Asian culture was not, it was always picked on. We ate,
oh, yeah,
they would call you boat, and now you're like, I came here on a plane and I was born here.
All yeah, things that would take place. So we weren't growing up here in Miami, we didn't accept being Haitian until I got into high school. Like, that's when I was, because I went to Coral Reef.
Mm-hmm.
So there were subsections within the high school that had different sections, and one of them was like a Haitian, it was a Caribbean like area, and then each area had like their own island. So there was a Haitian table, the Jamaican table, there was just different, these different yeah. tables. So that's when I like grew into like loving being Haitian.
Yeah. So no, I mean, I definitely could relate. Like, I mean, so I went to predominantly, from middle school, high school, I went to predominantly white and Hispanic school. So I feel like I always lean more into my Jamaican side because, you know, Jamaica is just like everybody loves Jamaica. Everyone loves Bob Marley, all that, you know, surface level shit. So like I leaned into that a lot heavier than my African side growing up. But I think when I went to school, specifically when I went to FAM, when I went to college, like, and just saw the complexity of not only, you know, like in Miami, you see complexities of different like countries, but in at FAM, you saw a lot of complexity in different like Black Americans specifically. You know, people from DC weren't the same as like people from Atlanta, and they weren't the same as people from California. And I'd never seen that before. So I think that made me feel more comfortable and leaning, because it was just like, okay, well, it's not like Black American is just one staple thing. And it's not even like Caribbean is one staple thing. Like you said before, like in that Caribbean section, you got your like, Guyanese, you got your people from Barbados, you got your Trinis, you got your VI, you know what I mean? So it definitely was, I leaned into that Jamaican for like a safety net, but like you said, just growing into your own, I definitely have stepped hard into like the African side. I just posted on my Instagram like a photo shoot I did, just wearing like traditional Afrikaner mitts and just good. Like standing on that. You know, I was looking like a snack meal.
You were flexing.
You know,
I didn't even think you had nowhere to go, but I was like that.
I didn't have anywhere to go. I don't know where I was walking to. Nah, and I'm not that type. Like, if you guys look, anybody see my Instagram, let me shout out my Instagram, at Sir Smite, feel free, SirSmythe. But yeah, like, if people on my Instagram, like, I'm heavy on the story, but I don't really post a lot just because, I don't know, I know how... I'm just not really a big poster anyways. It was a big moment for me, not necessarily even like the whole flex thing. It was just more on standing in my culture, specifically because I'm career-wise leaning towards a space that doesn't have a lot of Black people in it, that are decision makers. So I'm in the wine and spirits industry, which I love, but we're heavy users and consumers, but we don't really have people that look like me making these decisions. So, you know, it's definitely that whole being who you are in that corporate space, that's like a whole nother level.
I can relate 100%. I feel like that's the story of my life in terms of I did grow up in a white Hispanic majority going to schools. And then, yeah, the field I'm in is a white male dominated field. So. Mm.
Oh, you're getting hit from all. You're getting in gender, you're getting in race, and you're getting corporate. Oof.
Yep.
Yeah, that's it.
I think this past year was the first time I think I've worn my hair like out.
Okay. How did that feel?
I deal with it. I felt okay. At first, you know, I was like waiting for the glances or whatever, but I was like, I've done this, you know, like I've done this, you know how to deal with it. I think a lot of the insecurity comes with, I don't know how to handle this if someone were to say something or if someone were to confront you. But it's like, you're not doing anything wrong. Once you know you're not doing anything wrong, you're just being who you are. And if they're offended, that's their problem and their projection. It's easier to navigate through that. But
no, and I think you're onto something when you said a lot of it's just like that self, that conversation you have with yourself. Because a lot of people aren't really even worried about it to the extreme that people may have. Like, I know for me, so like career-wise, I had worked somewhere for like 7 years in management. Then I stopped, started doing events. Then for like 2 years doing Good Company, that's where I met you too. And that was like geared towards like creatives and millennials. Then sort of paused that to focus on school and then just getting back into like corporate work. So just going from that space in Good Company, which was like literally my friends, the creatives, to like, you know, people of color, to being in like a space that was back to corporate, man, it took me like a good 2 months to just like adjust. Like, I'm not gonna lie, like to be 100, like I remember this one time I like went on break and I literally Googled like how to be Black in a white space because I just, yeah. And it wasn't even like they tried me. Everyone was super cool. Like I actually really like love my coworkers. We have a really great time. But it was just that like insecurity in myself and just having those negative thoughts. Damn, like how do I navigate this space or whatever. Just a bunch of complexities that are ridiculous. But thank God I'm over that hump. So, but yeah.
Yeah, I took a year off too. And I took a position at a predominantly white firm. And around that firm is a lot of Republican Trump supporters, and they let you know with their gear.
Uh-huh. There it is.
It took me a second to be like, okay, am I going to fall back to how I used to be maneuvering through these spaces? Or am I going to be like, you know, you kind of have to meld like yourself and, you know, being in this corporate space, how much, you know, how open should you be? So that's a decision. Yeah.
And stick to like, you know, common points. That was like really big to me too. Like, don't worry about the differences. Like, stick to what we have in common. Like, if we're in the wine and spirits industry, that means we all like wine and we like alcohol. Right. So that was just always like a good just starting point. Like, what type of drinks do you like? What type of wines do you like? You know, what's your favorite category of spirits? And then going from there and then growing like those links. Because I really do believe we do have a lot more in common pretend we don't. Like, race is a construct. This shit ain't real.
It is.
So it's like, you know, we all fall to that narrative, but that's how I had to, like, get myself again and be like, bro, like, what are you doing right now? Like, how are you feeling this way? Like, get your ass in there. And
when you... I worked in the corporate world, but it was never... I had blocks in my hair. So it's not like I could hide my blackness
or
who I was. So I was in tune with who I was. So and I worked in one pharmacy. I worked in a predominantly white area. So these Caucasians and Spanish loved me because I was like, this is who I am. This is what you're going to get. You're going to either take my advice or not take my advice. And I had spaces where my managers were really open with me being fully myself. And
that's
created a network of people that I was able to like have these conversations and these and be able to grow relationships and learn about them and their families and stuff like that. And when I did leave that space for a moment to go into a more sales oriented space, it was a little different because I was the only black person at the time because the other black woman was on maternity leave. But again, I was myself. I didn't sway from being in this space and, I don't know, creating a new narrative myself, because I'm just like, you guys all, you're all here, you're all Miami. My supervisor at the time was from Ohio, I think, or some, and she's like, no, and she had like her accent and stuff, and she married a beautiful Hispanic man, and she's like, no, I love this city, I love the diaspora of the city, of the different cultures that are here, and we were able to connect in different ways, like you said, if you have a common point.
Yeah, so why do you think we think like that? You know, if we all agree,
it's the way we grew up. It's what was fed into our you know, our brains growing up in terms of like
what,
you know,
what exactly, like what narrative?
Okay, you get it from your parents, right? Your parents, okay, your hair. I didn't choose to perm my hair. My mom chose. I didn't make that decision. She chose to straighten my hair. So I was already told that the way the hair grew out of my head wasn't acceptable then. In terms of how you speak and who you hang out with and how you dress, that was the way it was explained to me, was that I needed to make it as similar to the successful culture, which was predominantly Caucasian. And in Miami, it would be the white Hispanic culture. So all of that was fed to you. And it takes relearning and reparenting yourself.
Yeah,
like just like you did when you're like, why are you doing this? Why are you telling yourself these things when you know, you're awesome? What are you talking about? So I think that's where it starts.
Colonization. That's the biggest thing. Colonization.
Colonialism.
like from us coming from these different islands in different countries where it was, like they were all colonized, and going to the specific culture, which is Caucasians, that this was the most successful, like Sarah said, this is the reason why we got made fun of, because we talked white, or we talked white, or we couldn't dress a certain way.
I still to this day get that comment, and I'm like, are you serious right now? Are we doing this?
That's 2020. You gotta come with something new.
Yeah, like get out of my space.
The way that we dress, the way that we presented ourselves. I'm really, really blessed to have a mother that I have, because my mom, with her hair and different things like that, she already had locks. Because I remember when I got locks, my cousins from my father's side, you got locks? Oh. Really?
I think I was like, Lisa locks, but then I guess I got
it. It was just like this whole thing because of the narrative of Black Americans. Like we were taught that Black Americans, we can't be like anything like that. I don't know if we were taught the same, but we were taught like, we can't be Black Americans.
We're not Black Americans.
Yeah, we're not Black Americans. You can't act like Black Americans. And this is because of the way that colonization has taken place within our country, and then coming into the States and then them seeing whatever's been portrayed on the news. That's all that they know. So we have to be this different way. And then just within that, like fighting within the diaspora, our different cultures, fighting against each other, saying though we're all the same and we're all the same. Again, like you said, race is a construct. So even within our cultures, or like, for example,
the Caribbean culture going against each other, like that was weird in itself. And that was through colonization, because we wanted to be close to what was seen as the accepted race.
It's definitely a lot of like unlearning. I mean, shout out to my parents because, I mean, no parents are perfect, but they did a great job of just letting me know it's okay to question the status quo. So I believe, you know, like putting me into the school that they put me in, again, as like a private school, predominantly white and Hispanic. I swam. So I was a swimmer from middle school to high school to college. So you don't see a lot of black swimmers. Exactly. So like, and I'm tall. So I'm like 6'1". And, you know, I have like a big wingspan, and it wasn't like, and of course, everybody first thought, or if they talk to my parents, they'd be like, oh, they, like he plays basketball, he plays football, this and third. And he's like, nah, like he swims. So, but they're always like mad supportive, even like with my teeth. Like I have a gap in between my teeth, and it was never like, oh, you know, you think about closing that. Like they've always been super, super supportive. And that's one thing with my dad, I will specifically shout him out, is he was just like, I remember he would tell me just like, Lombardi or all these like Italian last names, how they're like so long and stuff. He's like, that's the same way they're gonna remember like your last name. And it's something he constantly fed into me. It wasn't like, don't have shame in like your name. Like people are, I can't think of any Italian last names, but you know how they're like long. He's like, you know,
we say Schwarzenegger. We're able to say Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, Schwarzenegger. Even that, you know what I mean? And that's sad and fine. And so, you know, if you have, for instance, like an African, traditional African last name, especially like West African, which could be like pretty long, and then you probably have like 4 or 5 real names, or even from the Caribbean culture, like your first name got something, you got an accent. Like my dad, he doubled down on his accent. He did real estate financial advising, and he's not trying to sound American for nothing. Like he goes hard on his accent. But so yeah, shout out to him. I didn't feel that pressure, but I do know it's a common thing for a lot of parents, and I think it's a safety thing. I don't think it's malicious. I think it's ignorance on their part, and I think it's more of like a safety thing, like, hey, I want my kids to be safe. I don't want them to have to deal with
different in that they're being targeted.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a good transition into I was going to say code switching, but we kind of talked about it already when people were like,
got my PhD in that. Like Ben got that 18.
I'm really good at that. You see me with my white girl. Yes. I can be like, hello, my name is Lisa.
Oh, you do it. Oh, shoot. Okay. You
got the post doc. What's up?
But your name is Lisa. So
Lisa Fania. That's why I'm like, I'm using all of my name now. Cause I used to just use Lisa because of my, like I've said this before, both of my names are my grandmother, my mom's mom and my dad's mom. And so Lisa is from Luisa and Fania is from Fani. So it's more of honoring both of my grandmothers and these women, these matriarchs in my family that who became who they are. And I'm just like, no, this is my name. I'm not going to just use the white version of my name anymore.
Yeah.
It's not the white version. It's the Dominican, Haitian, Spanish version of your name.
Is that one? No, definitely the more popular one and more socially accepted. Yeah, and I mean, code switching, honestly, it's something I feel like everyone does to an extent. You know, I think just code switching in regards to like professional environments versus like casual environments. I'm just code switching with your parents, you know what I mean? The music that I listen to with my friends or by myself is not saying what I'm listening to with my mom. But code switching when it comes to like ethnicity, race, culture, like especially again, like going back to like a corporate space or more professional space, it's definitely it's a journey. You know what I mean? I think I'm getting to the end of it with a lot more confidence, but it hasn't always been like this, and it's still something that you have to
work at.
Yeah, something I have to work on.
To the end of it, you're like, you're just being within yourself.
Yeah, like coming to the end of just like the back and forth with it, like less shame talk, and more just like I've been reading this book. Oh God, I don't know. It's from Dr. Brené Brown, The Gifts of Imperfection. That's the name of it. Definitely check it out. It's amazing. But I'm someone that I'm very like most people, very hard on themselves, and also like somewhat of. When I am presented out into the world, I try to, I don't want to say be perceived as perfect, but like I can't half-ass, if that makes sense. Like I don't like to be sloppy with the way I do shit. But with this book, is it really like spoke about there's a gift in being in imperfections. there was one part specifically where she was just talking about the way that we talk to others is so uplifting and nice, and we don't talk to ourselves with that same type of narrative. And it's like, imagine if you spoke to other people how you spoke to yourself, like, you wouldn't have any friends. And so that was definitely like a perspective change, to just be more conscious and aware. So like tying that back into the whole code switch and then like saying that's the end of the journey is more the end of like me going back and forth with myself about how I need to question myself in certain spaces. Like that, I'm not going to say that conversation is going to die, but it's definitely a lot more controlled than it was in the past.
Yeah, she has a, I think it's a documentary on Netflix about courage, I believe.
Oh, nice. Yeah, she got big because of, like, she did a TED Talk on shame. TED Talk,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's super helpful. And that's exactly kind of what I do in terms of, like, you know, suffering from imposter syndrome, because you're out here telling yourself, like, you're not doing it right, you know, and you're trying to be perfect at it. So now you're like scared someone's going to find out that you're not who you say you are. And it's constantly just wrapped up in being a perfectionist. And like, I relate in that, you know, you just got to chill out. Just like, just like you would tell someone like, hey, it's a first try. Like you might take a couple tries. Like you need to tell yourself that as well.
Yeah, you definitely have to step outside yourself and just talk to yourself like you are talking to somebody else. I do that pretty often where I'm just like, sometimes it's got to reset. And then like in my mind, I'll be like out my body and just like talking to like my mind and be like, so what are we really like trying to do here? Yes, like what are we trying to achieve?
Why are you doing this?
Yeah. Like, cause this is draining. Is it efficient? Is it going to get you through the day? Does it even matter? So. Shout out to, speaking of like performances, Erykah Badu, I think she's doing another concert, but
is it $3?
Did some live stream. It's probably going to be $3 this time, because last one was $2 and it was a second, but it was the craziest performance I feel like top three I've seen, just, and this was a Zoom.
Really?
Yeah, it was crazy. Like so she had three different rooms. One was like a bedroom type of like, you know, holistic type of feel. The other one was experiential, so it was very, like, DJ technology heavy. And then the other one was, I think she called it, like, the Bossa Room, which was, like, real jazzy, like, French.
Ah,
and so she would perform in one room and then, like, throw it to the fans, like, the people watching. And we were able to vote, like, do we want her to stay in, like, for instance, her bedroom, which was, again, like, more of her mellow, like, typical Erykah Badu type of voice.
Yeah. Or
did you want her to go to the Bossa Room, for instance, which was a jazz room. And so we would vote. And then let's say she would go to like the jazz room, then they would have like some, it's like a magician they had. It was just sort of like, I don't know, something just to get them to move and also to make people laugh. And then she'll transition to the other room. And then her and her band will perform in the other room. And then if you want, after the song, she'll be like, hey, it's in your hands. Do you guys want to stay in this room or do you want to go to another room?
And it's really cool.
Yeah, it was super interactive. And then the quality of it was on fire. And then
it was better than the first one.
I didn't see the first one, but I think the first one people chose the songs, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, she was just in a room with a band and they just chose her catalog.
Yeah, Lisa, we got to get on this concert.
No, it was lit. Shout out to
first
her.
I was like, okay. I'll do it. But there's all this free content.
It was a lot going on. But yeah, it was definitely good. It was just a whole different experience. Like I've never seen something like that.
Because it's only on her website, right?
Yeah, it's not an IG live. It's like a live stream. And I mean, first of all, it's not like a shitload of money. It's $2-$3. And also, she always says up front, like it's not for her. It's for the people that she pays. So like, you could tell she puts money into this. Like it's not just your phone and it being put up there, like they're having three.
I saw all the prep for it. She's like,
yeah, it's a lot.
It's so cool. I've enjoyed like the little mini concerts that artists have put out because like,
yo, these creatives, I'm telling you, just from like a business front and just not from a creative front, like they really just from a human front, like creatives really just run the world. You know what I mean? Like, can you imagine if there's no creativity right now with everything that's going on?
We'd be in a depression.
So everyone would have the Rona.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, all right, let me transition because y'all just, we got 30
minutes. No, from there, because I'm like, it's your business, right? You have in good company, and this is where we met you. This is one of the spaces
my baby.
That really inspired. Like, we met you, like, I've told you this numerous times. Like, our first time meeting you was when you did the program at WeWork.
Okay.
You got all your friends to come in, and you guys all spoke about, like, your best. So you had Jasmine.
Yeah, Deji.
Yourself.
I'm a creative and I'm broke.
Suki, yeah, I'm a creative and broke. Suki and Silent Addy.
Silent Addy, right? And they all like had their own points of view of being creative.
Yeah.
And it sparked, so for me personally, it sparked such a creativity in me. And then at the time, this is how like the spirits were. At that time, before I went to that, I was working with Yana. And okay. I was telling Yana, I was like, oh, I'm going to this thing. And she's like, oh, my boys are there, which was like Deji and Eddie.
Yeah.
And it was just like from there being, no, because I was just like,
I met Deji and he was doing the videography. And I was like, oh, what kind of camera? And he's like, I have no idea what that is. I'm just
not like Deji.
But I was like,
me and Deji were roommates and at FAM.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's all me.
And so by just that, right, having the creativity where we are right now in this world, like, is it inspiring you to, I know that, I know from our conversations also with being in the wine and spirit world, combine that within in good company and make it more of a lifestyle than just like a party space?
No, I mean, I think, so I guess for people that are listening, so In Good Company, you can check our Instagram. It's In Good Company Miami. It's not really too active now, but, you know, working on everything. But you can see our past events, videos of it. We've been doing some playlists as well just to help everyone, you know, get some good music out there. But, yeah, I think one of my biggest, like, insights from In Good Company, it first of all, it just started off with, like, my friends. Like, I've always been more of the, as you could say, like, the corporate, I was a management, that project manager type when it came to my group of friends. But my friends, I think maybe 3 years ago, we did like our first event during Art Basel. And it just was a highlight of my friends. These are people I grew up for the last 10, 15 years, still really good friends of mine to this day. People like Z, who's an artist, who she's like been killing it. I'm really proud of the content she's been putting out.
Your time.
Yeah, no, nah, she's
kind of crazy. I cried. I screamed at my phone and I was like, oh.
Yeah. No, I'm not gonna lie, I was in shock too. Like I stare at my phone too, and I'm just like,
it was so good.
I was like, what? And then I like, yo, do I have white hair for real? Like. But yeah, like, so people like Z, my homeboy Alex Bahrain, which he's just like, he did like majority of our flyers, graphic designer, producer, all of that, friends that do music, friends that are photographers. Like, that was a point of it. And I just felt like they weren't escalated into a level that I feel like they should be escalated in. And so I think that's where I sort of came to it. We're just like, okay, let's start doing this like through events. The events like you're talking about, like being a creative and I'm broke, and then like for instance a locker room talk with just like all men.
Not for you guys.
Yes. Definitely, that's one thing like for sure is going to be coming back this year. I'm just trying to get grad school out the way.
I think.
Oh yeah, no, definitely.
I have a co-ed one.
Ooh, try that.
It was good.
Shit was going to be. Oh hell no, the girls that came out there, they were just like it was just like girls that didn't look familiar, and then they just came and they were just like, it was very much like, okay, well, we here in the locker room talk now, so now we're gonna tell you how we feel. And it's just like, that's not the locker room talk isn't made to be directed at anybody when you're talking. Yeah. It's made to just be like, oh,
I can
you're not the only one. I can relate to that. You know what I mean? So, and it wasn't that type of energy. But anyways.
I was just like, no, men need a space to just be and express.
Yeah.
And we as women, we always, because I advocate for men, especially like black men, of having a space to just have a way to talk and express themselves and be able to be just who they are and
be human. And you know what I mean? That's what it is. Like, I feel like as a black man, I mean, just as a human in like America and as human in 2020, it's very hard to be human. You know what I mean? I think that is what something a lot of people are coming to grips with. It's funny because I actually spoke to one of my accounts and she broke it down like really smart. She was just like, we're so used to being machines and going through like our day. Now people have to be human and they don't know how to face with it. And I was just like, damn, you're right. And so I think locker room talk, which Locker Room Talk, if you don't know, is like a men's only discussion where we talk about monthly event where we talk about different talking points like vulnerability. We talk about sexuality, talk about spirituality,
finances,
taboo like topics, yeah. I guess you can say, and just sort of like put a light on them. That's very like roundtable style. But yeah, so it was just like, you know, during this time, people are just being human. But yeah, so I think with In Good Company, the biggest thing I realized was like, okay, my initial thing was was promoting my friends, and a lot of like the knowledge that I gained was sort of like what I was saying before, not on like just a human level, but you know, if you want to transition it to a business finance level or just being successful in your business type of level, you have to bridge your commerce with a creative layer. You can't just be like super, super business oriented because you're not going to be able to connect. Creativity allows people to connect. It allows people to relate. So for me, I was like, okay, how can I be most effective in this space? And going back to like Caribbean culture, I grew up with literally every Saturday going to African parties, every Sunday going to lunches after church, and alcohol was always a common drink, Bailey's, Heineken's, wine, rum. And it wasn't, you know, I've had a good relationship with alcohol. I know a lot of people haven't. They probably have had people that are alcoholics, and I do, you know, prayers out and for people like that.
Empathetic to that, yes.
Yeah, definitely empathetic to that. But for me, I've always seen alcohol as a community builder and a community enhancer. And I think like getting into this space now with what I've done through In Good Company is like how I want to sort of enhance it and be more effective, not only for In Good Company, but just for, it's bigger than In Good Company. It's just for, for the community. Like, again, just from a commerce point of view, African Americans spend 70 cents a dollar on spirits, versus Hispanics that spend $50 a dollar on beer. And then I think whites spend 40 cents a dollar on wine. And so those are like the categories. And so we spend the most money on spirits and on liquor, but we're not making these, we're not in the decision-making process.
The dollars are not going in our pockets.
Yeah, the dollars we're spending, but we're not receiving it, whether it's through commerce, whether it's through marketing efforts and then putting money there. And that's part of the reason why, you know, a brand like a Hennessy is so indebted to like the culture, because they were the first, one of the first companies that put marketing advertising dollars into Jet and Ebony magazine, just companies period, which is, that's how magazines stay alive. Like, that's the point of having a magazine that's gonna stay. You need to get ad dollars because you're guaranteeing them like this amount of views. And so these, you know, for them to stand, and this is like in the 70s, companies won't even do this now, we're in 2020. So for them to be standing in the 70s and 80s, or I think maybe, yeah, 70s and 80s, and saying like, hey, this clearly black publication, we're going to be putting our ad dollars towards that, it shows. And that's part of the reason why it's indebted. So I say all that to say, I wanted to, from In Good Company, I just wanted to be more effective. And I looked at people, I think LinkedIn is a huge resource that's underutilized. I looked at people that had positions I wanted, specifically in the spirits industry, specifically when it comes to brand management. I saw all of them, for the most part, had their masters. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I got to get my masters. So yeah, I just want to be more effective in how I show up for the community. And again, to my original goal, which was just to like put people, create a platform. So like what you guys are doing now, you know what I mean? Like, it's dope with podcasts. You create a platform not only for yourselves, but for people that aren't able to tell their stories, and there's power in that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. 100%.
That was a lot. I'm sorry.
No, that's beautiful. Because I'm just like, this is who you are. Companies of everything that we just spoke about, for you to get to this position right now, it's basically your outline of where you're going to be, what you're trying to do, and what your true goal and your, I can't think, your narrative, whatever your narrative now, what you're creating your own narrative now.
Yeah.
You're creating your own narrative within the Black diaspora space. You're creating your narrative within the wine and spirit space now. And it's power. There's so much power within that. There's so much power within you just to be
able to. We uplift you.
Yeah.
We uplift you. Support you.
Thank you. No, I appreciate it. And I think sometimes, you know, I had like, it's sort of like I'm going down this journey, but I think sometimes it's now my brain is sort of transitioning into less of like, I'm going down this journey, and more into like, I'm just unpeeling the layers I knew I already had. So like me being in marketing, me being, if you ask, for instance, like Eddie and Deji, who I've known since high school, they've known I've always had a very unique, because my sister was in the hip hop industry. And so she was the vice president of marketing for Sip and Slide. So growing up, I went to a lot of like these club events, like 16, 17, and was just, for whatever reason, just very intrigued by people's behaviors in these spaces and their identity through just everything, like whether it's the lights, whether it's the music, whether it's the alcohol itself, like what makes you feel these type of feelings when you pay $500 for a bottle, you know, like all of those were I always in my brain was just like, yo, this is like, what is this? Which later to find out, this is consumer, yeah, it's consumer behavior, right? And it's and it's deeper than just this. It's not about the bottle. It's about the achievement that they got. Even for my mom, like, she recently got a Jaguar, like 2 years ago, actually. And it wasn't because she cares about cars or anything like that. But when she came from Jamaica to Miami, one of her first jobs was cleaning a person's house. And in their front yard, they had a Jaguar. Mm. And she always promised herself that when she gets to that level, she's going to get herself a Jaguar. So, and she cried getting the car and just telling me the story, because it was showing like she's arrived. And I think that's the interesting thing about like the spirits industry, specifically with, you know, Black people, and why we feel so attached to these bottles is because we're often not seen and we're not heard. Mm-hmm. And so when someone comes with some sparklers and bring the attention away, we're seen and heard, even if it's just on a supplementary way. And so, part of, and that's just human. That's not even just a Black thing, but I think it doubles down probably in the Black experience, where that's just not, we're not seen and heard as much as we would like to be. So all of that, I'm very interested in. And I think a lot of people manipulate it, and I'm not saying it needs to be manipulated. I don't think it's bad, but I think that it does need to be like responsible, I don't know, business, if that makes sense. The responsible marketing, let's say that.
Because it is, what is it, psychology?
It's exploited.
It's exploited. It's just, like, let's spend all this money here instead of, I guess, putting it back into the culture, putting it back into the person.
And then also making responsible choices in that, like, hey, well, I'm not in marketing. Let me not speak on it.
No, I mean, I think it's just, it's any business, period. Like, there's a problem, whether it's gender, race, when it's just like you're, you know, even like a Google, all these companies, when the people that are decision makers don't look like the people that are utilizing your product or service and spending money towards your product and service, not only because of the optics look bad, but it's just really a competitive disadvantage for you because you're not able to relate to these consumers on a deeper level that can reap you more financial reward. But like, and I feel like that's how, for me, I've had to enter this space, because as much as like, oh, I'm doing stuff for the culture, like people don't care about that. In business, they care about how can you drive revenue, how can you drive profits, and how can you lower expenses. If you're not doing one of them threes, then like fuck the culture. So it's again like putting the data points behind like, okay, well, you should stand behind these people because out of all the ethnic groups in the United States, these people spend the most per dollar on this product of alcohol, right? So it just makes sense. Like, why wouldn't you want to market to people that are consumers of it?
Hopefully by having people that look like us in the industry now, we can kind of turn that conversation and bring another perspective, because in this engineering world as well, I feel very similar in that, you know, the services we're providing aren't particularly benefiting the people in the neighborhoods where we're building. So, and it's a constant, you know, internal conflict for me.
But you got to stay there. You got to be in that space. And
I do. And I have to get the skills and, you know, learn and then try to do what for the culture that I care about. Because they don't care about the culture.
And you're doing it now. I mean, you're already in the space. You know how hard it is to fucking be in the space, even if you're not ideally quote unquote where you want to be?
Honestly, I have to remind myself often. I'm just always like, well, I don't know if they're going to keep me here. Like, you know, like they might be like, nah, too different. You out. It ain't working. Yeah. Or like you're scared to speak up in terms of like, hey, have you guys thought about it this way? I know like this is your brand. This is where your profits lie. But like, how about we don't take money from this person who's clearly just trying to scoop up as many, you know, lots as possible for cheap and then flip it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So no, I think that needs to be said. And I think it's just what I'm learning is just you have to like prepare when you make those arguments and really have like not strong data points, but just have something that is measurable that you can fall back on. Because people don't want to hear about like, oh, well, I think you guys should support more creatives. It's like, nah, you know, for a time like this, like I'm very interested to see, for instance, like the IG live reports of Instagram sort of shows, I'm sure their engagement has gone up. And then who's like their top 10 people? And then sort of like putting that in to be like, yo, 5 out of your top 10 viewers are either people from the culture, let's say, or people that are creatives, and that's a huge
market. It's an untapped market
for a huge untapped market that you could put your product in front of, which doesn't cost a lot. You know what I mean? Like it's not, you don't need some, bro. IG's not some crazy ass production. That shit is sometimes not even a phone stand. Like,
no, but yeah, people are
just leaning against the wall.
The woman that we were talking about earlier, her partner was doing an IG tutorial on how to be able to do your IG live with like backgrounds.
She has a whole setup
and stuff like
that. Okay.
She was charging
news recap.
That's dope.
$100. I was like, oh, I want to do this. And I looked and I was like, no, I'm good. I'm going to
$100.
But that's sometimes it though. Sometimes, and again, it's like that consumer behavior. Sometimes you got to charge more. Because people see more value in it. If it was free, you wouldn't be watching. You'd be like, man, whatever. But you probably remember, like, yo, this is $100. Like, it got to be something worthwhile.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Aki, we appreciate you coming on this podcast and just dropping all these gems. Like, literally,
yo, we're just having a conversation.
I want to put a pin on the crap. I should have written down. Put a pin on the marketing towards the culture versus, you know, profit and everything. I think
it was recorded, so
could always. No, I'm saying like it's gonna. That's a whole another conversation.
Oh yeah.
Actually, I figured out that's not what we're talking about. It's the materialism and kind of showing your status and that you made it. That's the podcast I want to do.
I
think that's huge. And there's a lot of documentaries out for like sneakerheads and things like that. And I think that culture to me is very interesting to kind of go through because these sneakers are not cheap, but yet you know who are the biggest consumers of these sneakers.
Not true.
So yeah,
I agree 110%.
I'm intrigued by that. But yeah, we appreciate you. You were an
amazing
first
guest. Thank you for your time.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Easter Sunday.
I mean, this is my church. Like, this is what we're doing. No, but thank you for having me. Thank you for letting me be the honor of the first guest. Like, that's super dope. So
you kind of
and
like,
you guys do a great job.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You kind of gave us the little flame or the push that we needed to do this.
You inspired me,
Aki.
Oh, man.
Damn.
All right, let's not make this. I'm literally the person who hates emotion. No, we're not going to show
emotional all around. I'll give you no
crying. Dry them up. Dry up those tears.
Exactly.
You guys definitely, again, like, I wish, and you guys are consistent too, like with your podcast. Like, I checked out a few episodes before this one, and I'm just like, man, I want to, but I can't. So definitely, like, shout out to y'all just putting out that content, putting out a perspective that's not seen, you know, being first generation, like, it's amazing. I wouldn't want it any other way, but there was no handbook. You know what I mean? Our parents couldn't really guide us, because they're not first generation and they're trying to just figure out their own shit and navigating a whole new country, which I can imagine is a whole different ballgame. Oof, don't know about that life. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, they're trying to figure out like how we're trying to figure it out. So definitely, I think this is something that's, I know it's going to just grow, and people want to have these discussions. These are conversations I have with my friends. So shout out to y'all creating a platform for that. Like, that's dope.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So do you have an equivalent to like, AP, that's it? We say like, AP, that's it. Like, that's the end of
the English version would be like, period.
Oh, shit.
Period with a T.
Period. I don't know. Like that's it. There's like, enough said, but that's not really like, anything. And it's just like, that's it. Like, enough said. Like, end conversations.
End. Period. Literally.
Yeah.
And walk away.
Walk away. All right.
Leave meeting. Drop mic.
All right.
Ippy, that's it. That's it. That's the end.